Hey everyone, and welcome back to episode 4 of the New Wave Podcast. I'm David, and I'm with my co-host Yusuf. And today, it's a very special day. We have our very first guest, Samar. So let's go ahead and introduce him.
Yep. Today, on the New Wave, we're joined by Samar Shah. He's a junior at UW-Madison and the co-founder of Red 11 Labs, which is a startup that uses AI to fight deepfakes and online disinformation. Samar recently pitched on the Silvy stage as a top 5 finalist at the 2025 Pressure Chamber. And we are super excited to dive into his journey as a student founder, tackling one of the biggest challenges in tech today.
Yeah, so Marth, welcome. Welcome to the New Wave. So
thank you
and you are both sophomores in college, so it's really special to have another college student on the show. So could you start by giving our listeners a little bit of a deeper intro about yourself, who you are, and what your company does?
Yeah, so my name is Samarth. I'm originally from Lexington, Massachusetts, which is a suburb of Boston. I have started going to school here in Wisconsin, in Madison area. This is going to my third year. I'm a junior now. And yeah, been really deep diving into the entrepreneurship scene since January, and have learned a lot in a very short amount of time, and happy to share everything I know.
Awesome. So before we dive into that, what made you want to start a company while still in school to begin with?
Well, there's a couple things involved, one of which is I was still really deciding what exactly what career path I want to do. I was originally a finance student, really wanted to get into like private equity, investment banking type stuff, really didn't see it as a right fit. Did a little bit of entrepreneurship, my own thing going on in high school, but I really wanted to do something very serious. I know right now there's like a big AI bubble as such, and really want to capitalize on that. And just creating some of my own thing can really make me stand out in a place that has over 50,000 students. So yeah, that is really important, and it just gives me a lot more growth doing my own thing than it was to do like say an internship or doing something that most of the people do here.
Yeah, that's awesome. I was scrolling on LinkedIn a couple of days ago, and I saw this study that says that like 90% or something really high, a really high number of like new AI companies are made by college students. Yeah. So it's like all of the college students are trying to take advantage of this AI bubble. It's like the Silicon Valley all over again. And it's honestly really inspiring to see everybody building something, everybody wanting to like have a legacy and have their own company.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that AI startups are really common from college students, simply because college students are the ones who know most about AI. If you had this thing going on with some other thing, maybe like some of the financial stuff, you know that you're going to see 40, 50-year-olds having most startups. But it's just simply that college students are the ones who know most about new tech.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Like, I go to MIT, and like a lot of the kids here, they're always working on their startup, like on the side, like on their homework and stuff. I've seen a lot of my friends like this. MIT allows you to take like 2 years off of school and like return after that. They call it a leave of absence, and I've just seen so many kids take their 2 year leave of absence to go like pursue a startup or like just move to SF and just like grind it out there. And then if it doesn't work out, they just come back. So I think college students are like the number one target for like, you know, these AI startups. They're just working on it every day. And like you said, I definitely think this is like they know the most about AI or they use it the most. I kind of want to dive into like, you know, like what you and your company do. So like, you guys work in like deepfakes, right? Could you just tell the viewers like what deepfakes are?
So yeah, deepfakes are pretty much any type of content generated online through websites, not by, they try to pretty much impersonate someone and do say stuff that's actually not being said by someone in a way that seems like they are. There are many different cases of this being very satirish. You could have someone saying something in a jokey manner, but what we really focus on is taking down stuff that is defamatory. There's a lot of cases of like people having AI nudity, or cases of like different audio clips of people going around and spreading lies about them. And taking that stuff down is really important, and that's what we focus on.
Yeah, for sure. Kind of like, you know, like you said, that seemed like a really huge problem. And I kind of want to ask, like, Was there a specific moment or like a story that made you want to like fight this information, or like what like really made you want to make this be your startup idea, or this what you wanted to pursue?
There's a long path of how we got to this. Me and my co-founder originally started in January trying to do something on the college level. We try to do something where we pretty much create like some marketplace for other students to trace their students without going through like a Snapchat, so Discord and stuff like that. That really found out was like there's some problems with it and that we weren't really the best ones to do so. So I really wanted to focus on something that like we can only do or other people are too scared of doing. Or so that really made us go into something else that we did, which did very well in the local Madison area and allowed us to get into many different organizations and offices around here. That really gave us one of the things that we did from that was work with NSF, using the NSF name to go talk to many different people, many different like, organizations, many different like corporate level execs and such. Gave us the vision of what we can do that actually people want, which made us go into deepfakes, seeing that like so many people are struggling with impersonation, yet there's not really a lot of people focused on the security side of it.
No, definitely. On a more lighter note, I remember seeing like the first deep fake in like in high school. There was a video of Will Smith eating spaghetti on
Spaghetti.
Instagram. And it's like 4 years later, 5 years later, and it's like it actually looks like him. Like obviously you can tell that it's not him. Like there's still like that sense of like uncanny valley coming from it. But the fact that it's improved so like basically exponentially from 5 years ago to now is just really scary to see because what's gonna happen 5 years from now, you know? It's just gonna get harder and harder to tell. And like I always see like on TikTok, like I'm gonna get scammed when I'm older because it's like when you're gonna be an old person and they're gonna be making all these deep fakes of people. And you know what? They're believable. They're gonna get believable and they're only gonna get better from there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest challenge for us is that we know tech around AI is going to be getting better and better every single second. So we have to be on pretty much going around making our own tech better and better to find these deep fakes. We pretty much see the how a quant firm always wants to get new strategies. That's one of the biggest costs forever onwards is finding a new way to detect AI when everything becomes better.
Yeah, totally. So let's get into the pitching side. So we did a little research on your company, on you. We know that you've been at Pressure Chamber, but you said that 6 months ago you were pitching in classrooms, and recently on August you were in stage of 400 professionals. So could you take us back to those early days when you're starting to hit the ground running? What kind of steps were you taking? What kind of people were you looking to towards advice, or was it just you and your co-founder grinding it out?
Yeah, so I know I suck at public speaking. Whenever it is like a big stage of people, I freeze up. So being able to to practice 24/7, making sure what you're saying is right and not sound like a robot on stage is really important. So I spent a lot of time doing that. Me personally, I'm in charge of the whole business side of our product. All the tech was being done by my co-founder. So I had a lot of time like developing a slideshow, making sure it's perfect. Like so many people, especially in college, they're really focused on just a product side. Nobody really has their business behind it at this stage. So having someone really focus on that, what is your go-to-market strategy, what is your total TAM, SAM, SOM, stuff like that is really important when it can really differentiate between like, the other people in college especially. Yeah, so we did a local competition in like across all Madison students. I think it's like 50, 60 teams in it. We placed second in that, got like 7.5K in grants. Only reason why we got second though is we simply did not have customers yet, and now we do have customers. So
There you go.
yeah, that even though we got second, that did open a lot of doors. We got in touch with a lot of VCs through that, in touch with a lot of people that can advise us. And yeah, just being able to use those resources was really helpful for us.
Awesome. Yeah, go ahead, Yusuf.
Yeah, so like, David helped us like, go back to your older days when you were first starting out and like how you kind of like got the how you kind of hit the ground running. I kind of want to go back to what you were saying about like your experience at like Pressure Chamber. So I mean, first off, can you tell the viewers what Pressure Chamber is?
Yeah, so Prestige Chamber is a competition held by something called the Greater Madison Chamber of Commerce. It is five different startups from all different levels, pretty much having an opportunity to talk about the company in a very big stage. That's not really possible in a small Midwest city like Madison. It's part of a bigger organization, a bigger event called Forward Fest. It's like a 5-day event of like over 60 entrepreneurship events going on. And yeah, this is like the holy grail as such of competitions. We were competing against other companies that are already making millions of dollars revenue a year, and other companies that already raised past the Series A's and B's in funding. So yeah, it was a whole fiasco just to get to that stage, or even being on the stage. We had to go through a lot of background pitches and checks and make sure we got good responses and everything, and all that stuff yeah, got us to the stage and gave us the ability to talk to a lot of people that really like an idea, including the ability to talk to you guys right now.
Yeah, I mean, like, it definitely sounds like a much bigger, like, platform to, you know, like, get your idea out there. Obviously, you have to, like, grind to be there. So, like, you know, in being able to do that, like, I really want to ask, like, what was your biggest takeaway from that about, like, pitching investors or, I mean, just about you guys as a company or yourself?
I mean, the biggest thing there is that entrepreneurship can be done by anybody, like at any time, pretty much. I'm still 19 right now. I was the first college student in the 12-year history to ever do that competition. Everybody else there was like 40s or 50s, and either were using the past experiences to create some type of product, which most people should do. But yeah, the ability to do something at my age and to get in front of a lot of people that can help me in the future is really good for me.
Any plans to apply for a YC Combinator?
No, I hate accelerators, especially when you're college. College gives you the ability to do all this YC stuff for free. You just need to see where to look. The ability to just have all the resources, all the grants can be done in-house. There's no need to give up the equity involved with that. Yeah, I'm very passionate, especially for like students, not to do accelerators.
Yeah, that's a hot take, you know. Like all over LinkedIn, everybody glazes all the YC Combinator
So
founders,
yeah,
all the people.
the biggest thing there is I see most people who do YC, they drop their startups 3, 4 years onwards and just they use the YC name to get a job at these FAANG companies. Yeah, if you're really passionate about what you're doing, there's especially if you're a student, there's so many other pathways and other ways to get your name out there for free than having somebody take more than 10% of your company for a lot less value than you possibly get elsewhere.
No, yeah, that totally makes sense. I've never thought about it like that because I'm so used to it being like held up to such high of a pedestal. But at the end of the day, if you're going to these amazing schools and you have these networks around you, then there's no reason why if you grind hard enough, you wouldn't be in the same room at the as these Y Combinator people. So.
And yeah, seeing YC is really just like it's just a stepping stone as such. It gives you the platform to get your name out there. But yeah, there's so many different organizations, especially at these top colleges that you guys are at, that can give you the same ability to do so.
Yeah. So on that stage, what was one of the toughest questions that you think you got from the judges, and how did you handle that? Because I know you said you're not that very good at public speaking. I'm the same way. I sort of like fake it till I make it. And like you'll be good on stage, and like deep down you're like a little bit nervous. So how did you handle these like really hard questions?
Yeah, so I mean, the actual presentation part, you can rehearse that as much as possible. The Q&A, you only guess what they're about to say to you.
Yes.
So one thing I really did was try to leave holes in the presentation so that I can kind of guess exactly what type of questions they give. So things about like a pricing model or things about like how much money you actually need and stuff that like I say I need $1 million, but then I won't say exactly how so that I can get the question later down the line. Those type of things can make it a lot better for you. But when it comes to, say, you not explaining product correctly, that stuff is on you to make sure you do it properly.
Yeah, I'm taking that note. Leaving holes for
Yeah.
questions. That's a
Oh,
great
yeah.
advice.
Oh, yeah, it's really important even on like your local projects. Just keep those holes open. Yeah.
How does Red 11 Labs like actually go about on like taking down these kind of like this information or defense? Like how does it like work? How does it do that?
So what we do is we talk to any type of celebrities, athletes, anybody who cares about brand image. They pretty much what they do is they pay us to pretty much they give us all the content, all the like the main social medias, any type of personal videos and audios they have, and then we pretty much scan the and they can scrape the web to find all these different places where their voice or audio, or the voice or the image is being AI generated. We then have partnerships with like Google, Meta, Twitter and stuff to help take down this stuff if you see it being used in a defamatory way. We have AI models that pretty much differentiate satire through satire to a defamatory content and take down the really important, the really like big cases that are defamatory, and then give you the option to take stuff down that we see at like 50-50.
Yeah. So something we've noticed in general, like one of our previous episodes was talking about AI generated content and how it uses a lot of like artist IP and stuff that's already out there in the world, and their models are trained on that stuff, right? And there are a lot of like legal cap like implications and different like intricacies of why that is illegal or legal, right? So what makes your guys' approach different from lawyers or manual takedown process, and how do you guys like make sure that, no worries, how do you guys make sure that you're providing a service that isn't necessarily out there for the other people to get?
So, I mean, the biggest thing there is that what we're doing already exists. It's really been used by like audio people as of now. Say like if you're TikTok, for example, there's many people who use audio clips, and then like UMG will come in and just take it down completely because they don't want people to use that exact song for these reasons. So what we're doing is pretty much giving, and what we're doing right now is already being done through lawyers. You have LeBron James, for example. He's fighting different cases of like AI pregnancy stuff going on, which is very weird. But he's paying like seven figures for these lawyers to take his stuff down. There's big money behind it, and giving the opportunity for these smaller creators and some like certain individuals like us, if you want to take stuff down, is really important. And you're doing that fraction of the cost. So yeah, it can be really fun examples like that, but then there can be always there's a lot of more serious examples of like different female celebrities that we talk to try and take down AI nudity cases of them. You don't want to have this type of stuff on it; it can really hurt you mentally. And giving the ability to take this stuff down is important for us.
Yeah, nice enough that you mentioned that, because I was reading that in one of your pitches, someone told you that they wish the product existed 5 years ago because of a tragedy involving cyberbullying. So, how do you balance working on like cutting-edge technology with the real emotional weight of these stories? Because at the end of the day, you're trying to do good for them, and it's serious stuff.
I mean, yeah, it's always a big thing of we're really trying to. The biggest thing that we got into this exact company for is like the humanitarian side of trying to make people's mental states better. And the ability to do so just keeps pushing us forward. And I don't think there's like a big cost on us that what we're doing is like we don't really see most of the cases of like this nudity stuff or this vulgar stuff that I'm talking about. We have many things on our side to hash all this content, so we don't really see it. But yeah, it's always a good thing to know what we're doing is something is needed, and it's always being reinstated through many different conversations we have.
Oh, for sure. And like I just you said that like right now you guys are working with like athletes, social media influencers, like these are like pretty like high net worth individuals, right? So like my question is like I know you guys are like in the early phase. How do you guys envision making this more accessible to like everyday people or just like people like me and David or people like me and you?
So right now we do kind of have four different models of pricing. There's a free version for you to just get used to the network. there is like an A-list celebrity customized one we have for corporate companies as well. We do 24/7 screening, trying to take stuff down as soon as possible. There's like another version we have for rising creators. We can take down stuff like over 300,000 searches we do. And it takes us, that's like around $300 a month. And then we have like an individual plan that's around $50 a month, that we take down over, I'd say, 100 things for you in a month. This is significantly lower than the other type of competition is there, especially the lawyers who do this. Lawyers from like even the lowest level lawyers at minimum are 250 an hour. We
Wow.
can pretty much, yes, lawyers are very expensive. And especially one of the best ones, like LeBron James ones, you know, that's going to cost you upwards of 600 to 1,000 an hour. So, like, the ability to do so at a fraction of what else is out there is making it a very accessible to individuals.
Yeah, no, for sure. That has to be game changing, right? Like, you guys are like at a fraction of the cost of all those lawyers, and you guys do it, like, I assume just as well, if not better. So, you know, like, you're in college, you're working on a startup, you're obviously doing your classes. I'm sure you have other things going on in your life. I want to know, like, more about you. Like, as you're heading into your junior year, what's it like juggling classes, running a startup, and like competing in events like the Pressure Chamber, and like just pitching your company to all these people?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, I really seriously debated, is it, should I take a gap year or not this year? But the fact of the matter is that when it comes to most of this stuff, like we know numbers not in our favor. As you say, like 90% of startups are, 90% of startups actually fail, right? After getting $1 million plus in funding. So we know that like as much as it matters that we're doing something as a company, it also matters getting a degree and having a backup plan of like a stable job as such. And as of now, we are able to balance the two. Most of the MVP and the stage of our product is that we don't need to really do any much developing right now, and we can solely focus on doing any type of sales, any type of business size stuff right now. But yeah, once like we do plan at some time to like make school like part time or maybe phase it out as such, but still in the mind that we want to get a degree done as soon as possible.
And for those who are listening and can't wait to work for you, Samarth, are there any goals of spreading that team that you guys have right now?
Yeah, I mean, we are in talks of closing a venture fund right now, and with that, we do have a lot of money to. We have a lot of money to spend for labor, so we are looking for more developers and more people to help us in the future. So yeah, please reach out to me
Man,
in the future.
there we go to our listeners who can't wait. They are looking to hire some people, but I'm curious. College founders. There's a big stereotype of college founders just like vibe coding, pumping and dumping different AI startups, especially these days. So, what do you think is one of the biggest misconceptions that people have when they hear that you're a college founder or college founders in general?
So there's a okay. The difference between vibe coders and most of that stuff is a difference between a product and a company. A lot of people can create things, but don't realize what it means to start making money off the product. I know a lot of people who have very cool ideas, but the ability to actually monetize it in a way is what separates us from everybody else. Like even in the competition where we got second on, most people have ideas of how what they have great ideas. But when it comes to realizing is there actually a market that's worth billions of dollars behind it, most people fail to even realize what that is.
Yeah, no, definitely. So, if you win that trip to San Francisco, again, I've been reading up on you guys. What's your strategy going forward and pitching in front of investors out there in that big like AI hotspot for all these startups?
I mean, we're again, we're wrapping up our pre-seed venture round right now, so talking to investors is not going to be something we're doing until at least 2 years down the line. And yeah, it really, you got to really balance the ability to talk to people externally and also focus internally as well. And knowing when the right times to do so is important. Having advisors is really important to make sure you're on the right level, especially for us. We're very young, don't really know what we're doing as such right now. We might say we do, but we actually really don't. Having people that can help you that have 20 years plus experience in the fields that you really want to get into is important to really guide you as such.
Oh yeah, definitely. Mentorship, incredibly important. Even like in early stages of your life, like in high school, I wouldn't have even got to the school that I am right now without a mentor. And I wouldn't even have
Absolutely.
this opportunity to have a podcast and interview you and like ask so many questions to you without mentorship, you know? And I feel like that's, it really does take a village to do anything, you know? So it's important to surround yourself with people who are interested in seeing you grow. And when you do grow, when you do succeed, then you give forward. You become the mentor and you help others as you succeed, you know? That's an amazing sentiment to have.
Definitely. And as we kind of like wrap up here, I really want to ask you, Samarth, if you had to give advice to any other college student, who's like sitting on an idea, who has a really cool idea that they want to either create, or they want to, like you said, just get a product in a company, they want to turn their product into a company, but they don't think they're ready. What would some advice you have for them, or like what would you say to them?
I mean, there's two big things with it. Is one, are you working with the right people? Your co-founders are as important as you when it comes to this thing. Not just building a product, but making sure you have the skills to create a business out of it is important as well. I was able to do my business with my co-founder doing all the tech side and me doing the business side, and we also know as much as about the other side to make sure we're actually doing things correctly. So that is really important if you have one person, two or three people, to know that you have all the skills involved to create a business. The second part about it is always review if you're in the right field and what you're doing actually makes sense. If there's some red flags going up, realize it might be time to start quitting or might be time to do something else. The ability to go after something and look at the field is important, but if there is that field is not looking for something new and it's already solved, start looking elsewhere fast.
Yeah, it's really, really coincidental that you mentioned that you and your founder are sort of like a power duo. Like it's
Yes.
you're the business, he's engineering, and I've known Yusuf for like a better part of my life. He's been my best friend for a while, and every time we like brainstorm on like making our own startups and we're like running ideas through each other, I'm always the business and he's always engineering. So that's really funny that that's sort of like the mirror of what we would have done if we already started like making our startups and like grinding out like these ideas that we've had. But as we wrap up, I wanted to ask you, like the title of our podcast is The New Wave. So what does the phrase the new wave mean to you?
I mean, with every generation comes over a new way of thinking. Right now, it's for us. It seems like it's going to be AI, but we know 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, it's going to be something completely different that nobody even knows right now. The ability for new people to think of new things is important, and making sure that those people always have a voice is going to be very important in the future.
Definitely.
Couldn't have said it better. So, as you wrap up, Samarth, David and I want to thank you so much for your time, and we
Yeah,
want to
thank
give a
you.
huge thanks to Avatar AI for sponsoring this episode today. It was great talking to you about your company, what it does, how you're really looking to develop it in the future, bring new things, how you've been talking about your journey as a college student, balancing startup, balancing classes, and pitching your stuff. We appreciate the advice so much. David, anything to add for the viewers?
Just a huge thanks. I've been in contact with Samarth for like about 2 weeks now, and school started, so it's been a little bit hectic, but I'm so glad that we finally got this on schedule. Had a wonderful podcast, wonderful conversation with you, Samarth, and I look forward to staying in touch. I wish you the best successes. I wish you keep on grinding and to just lock in, brother.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.
See you guys next episode. Bye bye.